Russia has stopped the flow of gas through Soviet-era pipelines to Europe that run through Ukraine. It's a $5 billion loss to Russia's Gazprom.
The deal expired after Ukraine's Naftogaz refused to renew its latest five-year transit deal with Russia's Gazprom.
This is a giant setback to Russia's energy business in Europe that goes all the way back to policies established when it was the USSR.
This is not just a major milestone, it's part of a bigger strategy in Ukrainian statecraft. I think Ukraine tries to give Russians a taste of their own medicine.
Today is Wednesday, January 1st, and this is The Issue from VOA. I'm Scott Walterman.
Уважаемые граждане России.
Russian President Vladimir Putin, in his New Year's address to the Russian people, telling them everything is going to be all right in 2025. But Russian gas supplies to Europe via Ukraine ended on New Year's Day, bringing down the curtain on Moscow's long period of dominance of supply in the European gas market. An overview on this development now from Reuters correspondent Lauren Cook.
Russia's oldest gas export route to Europe is a pipeline dating back to the Soviet days. The deal expired after Ukraine's Naftogaz refused to renew its latest five-year transit deal with Russia's Gazprom. Ukraine's energy minister, German Galushenko, called this a, quote, historic event. Russia is losing its markets. It will suffer financial losses, he said in a statement. Despite the war between the two countries, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky had said in December that Kyiv might consider allowing the transit of Russian gas. But it was on the condition that payments to Moscow be withheld until the fighting ends. Russian President Vladimir Putin, a week later, said there was no time left to sign a new deal. Russia and the Soviet Union spent half a century building up a major share of the European gas market, which at its peak stood at around 35%. But the war in Ukraine has all but destroyed that business for Gazprom, and Russia now holds about 8% of the market. Most Russian gas routes to Europe are shut, including Yamal Europe via Belarus and Nord Stream under the Baltic that was blown up in 2022. EU gas prices rallied the same year to record highs after the loss of Russian supplies. But experts say a repeat of that rally is unlikely, given the now modest volumes involved and the small number of customers impacted. The Ukrainian route serves Austria and Slovakia, and both have arranged for alternative supplies. Ukraine is giving up some $800 million a year in fees from Russia, while Gazprom will lose close to $5 billion in gas sales to Europe via Ukraine.
Reuters correspondent Lauren Cook. So let's deep dive into this. Joining us now is Sergei Sanovich, a Hoover Fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University in California. Thank you so much for taking the time out today on New Year's to talk to us about this.
Happy New Year and Hanukkah Sameach.
Thank you. So today, Russia shut off the supply of gas through its pipeline, which goes through Ukraine to Europe. We knew this was coming. It wasn't a surprise. It's the end of a five-year contract to allow the gas to pass through. But it's a major milestone, I think, or am I wrong?
Yes, I think this is not just a major milestone. It's part of a bigger strategy in Ukrainian statecraft. I think Ukraine tries to give Russians a taste of their own medicine. On the battlefield, when in August last year, they invaded Kursk region in Western Russia, and they still hold positions there. And in economic statecraft. That is, you know, in his statement about this, Zelensky made it clear that it's not a new thing. He is blaming Russian own attempts to use gas supply as a leverage against both Ukraine and Western Europe in the last quarter century. Recall that the first big gas supply crisis between Russia and Ukraine, it was January 1st, 2006. It was Putin's first war on Ukrainian independence and sovereignty after Yushchenko came as president after the first Euromaidan. And it basically never stopped since.
Yeah. Well, they had built quite a, you're not wrong, since the Soviet era, they have been working to build up their share of the European energy market and had reached about 35% of all of the fuel that Europe was using came from Russia. And that's virtually gone now, isn't it?
Yes, that is sort of, it's destroying the legacy of like Kosygin and Brezhnev time when Soviet Union started to really gain a lot from its oil and gas fields in Siberia that were developed since 1960s, and it really sustained Soviet economy, which was otherwise extremely inefficient for half a century, including when after the collapse of the USSR for a new Russia and even some neighboring countries that were using this system of pipelines to supply its gas. And Russia also used it to sort of manage their relations with countries like Turkey, not just former Soviet republics like Kazakhstan or Azerbaijan, but also Greece, and the whole of Eastern Europe that was dependent on this supply again since Eastern Bloc time. And this would be certainly the legacy, these leaking tankers that are now supplying discounted Russian oil, to Asia, causing all sorts of trouble. And this destruction, this extremely valuable, unique in many ways resource.
I know that I've seen reporting that estimates that Gazprom is going to lose $5 billion a year by shutting this pipeline down that they shut down on the 1st of January. It's $800 million to Ukraine as well, but $5 billion to Gazprom is a lot of money.
First of all, I think it's important to mention that for Ukraine, this is, I think, a strong sign of their confidence in economic aid, particularly from European Union, because Americans are more focused on supplying weapons. But Ukraine also needs some additional investments in just, sustaining its economy, its public sector and so forth. And this move certainly is a strong sign of confidence that this aid from European Union under this new commission, still headed by von der Leyen, that it will be coming. And also a sign of confidence that its own economy is resilient even in this extremely dire circumstances. When it comes to Russia, I think, it sort of is a little bit eased by the fact that Gazprom is not very profitable or efficient to begin with. It's increasingly becoming sort of the ward of Russian government and of other sectors of economy. You know, Putin and his cronies, they took full and complete control of the whole of energy sector in early 2000s, soon after Putin came into office a quarter century ago. And, I would not surprise you if I say that it was not very efficient management by people like Sechin and so forth. And so other more private, more independent sectors of Russian economy are now sustaining this energy sector through their taxes that Putin recently increased.
Alexandra Prokopenko wrote for the Carnegie Russian Eurasia Center that even with the invasion, even with the sanctions, the Russian economy has defied expectations. You know, people were saying there would be a double-digit contraction. And on the contrary, their GDP grew 3.6% in 2023. They're expecting a 4% growth in 2024. It's become one of Putin's trump cards. He waves this data at the West. China has taken notice, she says, and has sent people to study what Russia is doing so that they potentially can do the same thing in China. Has it hurt the Russian economy, the war and the sanctions?
Oh, China might have sent some advisors to study Russian economy, but Putin would much more appreciate some sort of military aid, which is not coming, which I think is important to mention. In general, yes, this was, I would say, a true triumph of market economy. That was one institution that Putin inherited from democratic reforms in 1990s that was so wildly successful. It still sustains the government even through all this mismanagement and miscalculations. Now, you shouldn't sort of overestimate that. You know, Russian economy is in a very fragile state with very high inflation. Russian currency was basically in free fall throughout the end of last year. It was stabilized, but again, it's quite fragile. And it's just, you know, it's a classical sort of Keynesian enormous fiscal stimulus by this spending on the war, but it's possible to sustain it forever. So Putin's whole gamble is that he will just be a little bit more resilient than Ukrainians. He just needs to be like 1 year ahead, you know, but it's not, you know, if Ukrainian allies hold strong, it will put increasing pressure on the Russian economy, and Putin will be certainly in more vulnerable position for negotiations a few years from now than currently.
Has it hurt Russia on the world stage? You know, they're now doing business with North Korea. They're trying to do more business with China, but China's being cautious.
Well, first of all, speaking of Trump cards, in the same statement about the end of gas supply, Zelensky mentioned increasing gas supplies from United States, which is favorite Trump's idea to appeal to the incoming administration, which means that, again, the longer it continues, the more Russia loses strategically. It can hold for, you know, Putin is not about to run out of money this year or even next year. But he's not about to retire either. And because he's thinking long term, even longer term than most European or American politicians, he's concerned about, for example, you know, all these sanctions and about losing all this business in Europe. And so that would be certainly a useful card to play when and if any negotiations happen. Now, when it comes to China, I think it's like there is a lot of, you know, theories about what's going on there. And I think the reality is much more straightforward. Chinese are very much willing to do business with Russians. They were before the war and they are now. But it's just business. They're not out there to like really help Russia to win this war. To the extent that, you know, it is good for their bottom line, yes, they're very happy to buy cheap Russian oil and, you know, maybe some Russian weapons technology, you know, certain other areas. But this is only to the extent that it benefits Chinese, and Chinese are not in the strongest position now to begin with. So even if they wanted to help, it would be not that easy, but apparently they don't. They just exploit business opportunities, which are still, you know, they're increasing, but they're still pale in comparison to what China trades with United States and Europe. So for them, certainly those markets are more important than Russian, even though the share of trade with Russia increased.
Final thoughts. What do we look for in 2025, in your opinion?
Well, I think situation is not, you know, it might look stable that like the front line is not moving much, but, you know, Russians did some incremental, got some incremental gains in the last few months, but it's still nothing too dramatic. But this might conceal the real state of affairs. I think Ukrainian army is really stretched thin, and if it continues in the same fashion for, let's say, not a year, we might see a more dramatic developments in terms of Russians moving this front line more quickly. At the same time, Russia is not that, you know, there is not much strategic reserve there either. Look at the air defenses, right? What happened with that plane in Chechnya and also recent drone attack on Kazan, both quite far away from the border with Ukraine. And, even these North Korean soldiers, they still didn't help Russia evict Ukrainians from Russian territory in Kursk. They're there still since August. It's almost half a year now. We are looking at occupation of Russian territories that didn't happen since 1944.
Yeah.
Right. So strategic reserves are there, not great either. I think, this moves by new Trump administration, they could significantly affect the state of affairs. So I think both parties are sort of in wait, and they try to get as much leverage as possible ahead of the new administration. Russia with this incremental gains on the front line in Ukraine. Ukraine was holding this territory in Kursk, stopping Russian exports to, Eastern Europe from Gazprom. They try to get as much leverage as possible to that very important point that might come soon, when the situation might start to change rather quickly.
Hmm. Sergei, thank you so much for the info.
Pleasure to talk to you, as always.
Always. Always good to talk to you. Sergei Sonovich, a Hoover Fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University in California. You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, both here in Washington and in our bureaus around the world, thank you so much for spending this time with us and trusting us. Follow The Issue on X or Blue Sky or Facebook at VOA The Issue. And you can get news 24/7 on our website, voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.